You're about to listen to a Second City Works presentation, brought to you in partnership with WGN Radio. Subscribe on your favorite podcast streaming platform or listen on WGNradio.com. And be sure to share.
The Second City is a world-famous comedy theater, and it got so famous because it has produced generation after generation of comedy superstars. That didn't happen by magic. Second City's improvisational pedagogy fuels great performance, and the same practices that made stars of everyone from Bill Murray to Tina Fey can be applied for success offstage, at work, at home, and in the world. I'm Kelly Leonard, Executive Director of Insights and Applied Improvisation at the Second City. This podcast is about collaborative conversations, seeking connections, and finding a better way. This is Getting to Yes And.
Days can't be counted by the money spent. Today was just another better left unsaid. Days can't be counted by the time to rent. Tomorrow's just another like the one that comes next. The car on the highway that leads to the job, at the desk by the boss with the elegant watch. The tick of the clock and the tick of the clock mark the moments till the tick.
My guest today on Getting to Yes And is BJ Fogg. BJ is the founder and director of the Behavior Design Lab at Stanford University. In addition to his research, Fogg teaches boot camps in behavior design for industry innovators and also leads the Tiny Habits Academy, helping people around the world. One of Fortune's 10 new gurus you should know now, BJ has a new book. It's called Tiny Habits, The Small Changes That Change Everything. BJ Fogg, welcome to the show.
Kelly, thank you for having me.
We're recording this podcast in December, and come January, many a New Year's resolution will be made and failed. You write in the introduction of your book, quote, "There is a painful gap between what people want and what they actually do," end quote. Why is that?
Well, people really do want to change and improve their lives, but they don't know how to do it. They haven't been given a simple, realistic way of bringing new habits into their life. Instead, there's kind of this history of here's how you change, and it uses willpower, and you have to keep yourself motivated. That's the old way. That does not work very well. And unfortunately, too often people believe that's the only way to do it. It has to be painful. You have to endure. You have to find willpower. And that's not true at all. In Tiny Habits, I map out a simple way to do it that's actually fun.
Yeah, and a key word, it's tiny. I mean, you have this phrase, tiny is mighty. And I guess the habit that you talked about that illustrates this, I think, quite beautifully is the Maui habit.
Yeah, the Maui habit is this. And there's only one thing in the entire book. There's only one habit that I prescribe for everybody, and it's the Maui habit.
Mm-hmm.
And that's as soon as your feet hit the floor in the morning, you say, it's going to be a great day. And what happens is it just sets your day in the right direction. So it's a great habit to do. Other than that, Tiny Habits is all about what do you want to do, and here's the method for making it a reality. But yes, I do prescribe the Maui habit.
Yeah, and I certainly know from the studies I've done in behavioral science that there's real evidence to back this up, and saying it out loud is key. You can't just say it in your head, right?
Some people find it's better as soon as they look in the mirror in the bathroom or when they turn on the coffee maker. But the way I've done it in my life, and I've given a TED talk on this, and the way lots of other people do it is as soon as the feet hit the floor, you say it out loud. If my partner's sleeping, I say it in kind of a whisper.
Right.
I don't wake him up. But it's a great way to start your day, and boom, you face the day better. You face whatever challenges come your way better. And the opportunities you take better advantage of.
So you prescribe a map, and that means a couple things. In your map, it's about motivation, ability, and prompt. And this is where you cite that behavior happens. Can you walk us through that?
Yeah, there's in about 2007, I figured out a fundamental model for human behavior. So it applies to all behaviors and all cultures, and it's pretty straightforward. And Kelly, you just said the three components is behavior happens when there's motivation to do the behavior, there's ability to do behavior, and there's a prompt. And when those three things come together at the same time, the behavior will happen. And once you understand that, then either analyzing behaviors or designing behaviors gets a lot easier because you know exactly what the components are.
Yeah. And you say behaviors, quote, behaviors are like bicycles. They can look different, but the core mechanisms are the same: wheels, brakes, and pedals. So this is true essentially of all behavior?
All behaviors. So there are habits that people want to stop. Let's say people want to stop checking social media so much. So guess what? You remove the prompt, or you remove ability. You take the app off your phone, or you reduce motivation. So that's one behavior. A different behavior might be you want to eat a healthy snack every day at 3 o'clock. So that's now creating a habit, but it still comes back to motivation, ability, and prompt. You just, for whatever behavior type it is, it always comes back to those three things. And that's in Tiny Habits. I explained that in detail for the first time. And that's one reason I'm so excited about sharing this work. At last, there's a systematic, accurate, simple way of understanding behavior.
Yeah. So I got a little obsessive with the whole prompt idea. And this is, you know, I've worked in theater my whole life. We, of course, talk about prompts and in improvisation in general. You are getting suggestions from the audience that serve as prompts for you to improvise your scene. You can't do it without that prompt. And I've been trying to find them in my existence. And one of them was my office is right off the kitchen at Second City, which means there's just like crap out there all the time to eat. And I was like, okay, how do I avoid this? And I realized I could create a shorter distance between myself and healthier food. So I went to the store across the street and loaded up on like cashews or almonds or other things that I could just, and it was really, the distance was actually key for me, that I really, if I had this other stuff closer, even though I maybe wanted to eat the cookies, I went for the almonds.
Yeah, you did exactly the right thing. In some ways, one way to change a habit like that is to make the behavior you don't want, eating all the crappy food, harder to do, and then make the good behavior, the healthy snacks like you did, easier to do. And if you do those both at the same time, you shift the scales and you're much more likely than to eat the healthier snack because it's easier to do. And yeah, you have motivation to do it. And sure, the bad food is still calling to you, but if it's harder to do, it means it requires more motivation, and you may go, "Ah, it's not worth the trouble. Let me just eat the almonds here."
Yeah, and you actually say in the book that, like, quote, "fussing around with motivation is the last step in the troubleshooting order," and this is because motivation is essentially kind of unreliable.
Yeah, motivation is really slippery and tricky, and it's different for different people. And our motivation shifts through the year, of course, but it also shifts through the day and through the week and so on. It's, you know, sometimes people say, "Oh, we have to motivate behavior change." And that drives me a little crazy because no, motivation's not the whole, that's not the whole puzzle here. You've got motivation, ability, and prompt. And it's easier often to design for ability, like make something harder or make something easier. And then the prompt is simply the thing that says, do this now, eat this snack now, or call your mom now, or, you know, whatever that reminder is or that prompt. And you can design prompts and you can design for ability, and manipulating motivation in a stable long-term way is much harder to do. So you leave that when everything else hasn't worked.
Right. One of the things I was so heartened by throughout this book, and it connects to many of our interviews. So we just a couple of weeks ago interviewed Ash Carter, the former Secretary of Defense. His book is filled with how much practice that they employ in the DOD in terms of war games. And it's like, he goes, look, we are practicing way more than we're actually doing the job that we were hired for. And that's a good thing. And right before he came in to record, a publicist sent me a book from a new Harvard Business School professor about the need to experiment. And this is an improv thing where it's like, we are all about the practice. And that's what you talk about. And I love this phrase that you have. You said, quote, "I want you to treat your life as your own personal change lab, a place to experiment with the person you want to be." This is crucial, and I don't think enough people do it.
Exactly. And in part of Tiny Habits, I explain how behavior change is a skill. It's actually a set of skills, and I put them into five categories. Now, when I figured that out, I mapped out those skills a few years ago, and I gave a keynote on it. And I thought people would go wild over it, you know, because nobody's ever talked about it in that way. And the audience, it took the energy out of the audience. And I think what happened, Kelly, was this. is that people went, oh, it's a skill. It's not magic. There's not a pill I can
They
take.
Wanted it to be magic.
No, it's a skill like playing the piano or dancing or improv using Excel. But that means, and this is what I thought would happen, but it didn't with this audience. I think with your listeners, they'll get it and embrace it. But what that means is, yeah, maybe you're not that great at changing your behavior right now, but you can learn. Look at all the other things you've learned. Look at all the other skills you've learned. There is a systematic way, and I map it out step by step, how you can learn this. And then it gets easier to do and even fun.
Well, I think a lot of people, especially in our business culture, make a lot of money off of the myth of the great man or great woman and the magic of creative directors and that sort of thing. When those of us who are, you know, behind the nuts and bolts with some of this work, I mean, the amount of practice and learning that people like Stephen Colbert or Steve Carell or Tina Fey or Adam, all those people I worked with, I mean, they work hard and they were working and they were being educated and then they were experimenting and they were practicing and they carried that into their careers, which is why they were successful. I have yet to see the person who just walks in and is magic.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly.
And the same thing goes for creating habits or changing habits. Some people are going to be naturally better than others, just like improv or piano playing or surfing, but nobody's perfect and everyone can get better if you practice it in the right way.
I thought there was a really interesting, wrapped us in a story about a marriage that had fallen apart and those sort of ugly interactions that you can have with your ex. Yeah. But you talked about this woman who found a way to use someone else's behavior as a prompt for her better behavior. I thought that was a really sort of an enlightening concept and might be good to explore.
Yeah. Amy, gosh, I've worked with Amy for a number of years. She's a colleague and she does design and things like that. And then she learned the Tiny Habits method and applied it in her life. But then what you're talking about, Kelly, is there's a special use of it and it's called pearl habit. So you take something that's annoying you, like a grain of sand in an oyster, and then you use that to create something beautiful or positive. And in Amy's case, in her unhappy separation and divorce, whenever she interacted with her ex, he would criticize her. He knew what her hot buttons were, and he would push them. And so that was awful, and she dreaded interacting with him as they handed off the kids and so on. But with Tiny Habits and using the special version called Pearl Habits, she decided every time my ex insults me, after my ex insults me, I will then pick something good to do for myself. Mm-hmm. So if he said something mean to her, she would think, for example, great, I'm going to go buy that new book I've wanted, or I'm going to go book a mani-pedi or what have you. And that is using Tiny Habits. We call that a recipe. After X happens, in this case, after my X insults me, I will, and this is where the new habit comes in. You know, I will, in this case, I will do something positive for myself. And what Amy found is by doing that, her ex's attacks didn't have the power and potency, and she didn't respond in the same way. And then he seemed over time just to lose the energy or the drive to use that against her, and the relationship, oddly enough, became much better. And there was in some ways, the surprising piece of evidence for that was her daughter was having a party, a graduation party, and they both were there at the party, and it was very civil, and everyone did fine. And she thought that could never happen. And thanks to using Tiny Habits and this, you know, the prompt was this negative statement, she then detoxed all of that, essentially.
Gratitude is so powerful. And I think that, you know, for personal development, for especially, like, you know, we all know the time we're living in right now. We read newspapers, we listen to the radio, and there's such a lack of that level. Some people call it civility. I'm calling it gratitude. But this idea of being kind to ourselves and being kind to others and what that can do to help us solve the problems that we need to solve.
It's so important. You know, it was actually just last night, Kelly, you know, so now that Tiny Habits is here, finally, I'm so eager to get it into the world. And I thought, yeah, I really care about people creating positive habits, but even more so, there's this feeling that happens when you feel successful And I teach about this in my work and in Tiny Habits. And I call that emotion, I call it shine.
Yeah.
So that's the internal emotion you have when you feel successful. And it turns out that's the emotion that wires in habits. So I teach about that. But it also has these great ripple effects where it uplifts your day. You have more positive interactions with others. And so last night before I went to bed, I wrote down, wow, my life's mission is to bring more shine into people's lives. Boom. Mm. And I went to bed and I read it this morning and I was like, yeah. And Tiny Habits, as important as that is, and as much I've worked on that, Tiny Habits is a means to that end. You know, through Tiny Habits, people can feel shine and they can help other people feel shine. And I thought, yeah, that's what I'm about right there.
Mm-hmm. That's not a bad day's work and not a bad way to make a living. So one of the also connect points I found between our work is when we're doing these improv workshops for corporations and other groups, we often have them do kind of a risky game that they're likely to fail in. One of them is called 1001. And basically we have them tell a joke off the top of their head. 1001 lampshades walk into a bar. The bartender says, we don't serve lampshades. 1001 lampshades say X. And usually it's a terrible pun. But the job of the classroom and all the other people is no matter what that person says, even if they don't make any sense, whatever, is to clap wildly, to scream like it's the funniest thing ever. And we do that over and over again. And we talk about everyone about how do you feel? And they're like, I felt great. And I gave the worst joke possible. So this ties into your idea around celebrations.
They're totally, what you created is this shine machine.
It's a shine machine.
They're still stealing it, right?
Mm-hmm. And,
you know, okay, so I did some work with SF bats, okay, years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And that had a big impact on my thinking and the whole like, yeah, I screwed up and not feeling shame around that, but owning it. And then I think it really helped me. I mean, so here I am, a behavior scientist, and I'm taking improv with my partner. My partner was surprisingly good at it. He's never done anything like that.
Great.
And so we're doing this, and I learned so much. I learned about human psychology in a way that I couldn't have learned through running experiments or reading academic papers. I think there's definitely a connection here between what you're doing, what the listeners are doing, and Tiny Habits and bringing shine into people's lives.
Yeah, that's what made me excited about it. And I co-lead a program at the Center for Decision Research at Chicago Booth that does just this in terms of, we've done a lot of executive education programs and some research, because at the end of the day, we are talking about human behavior, and the woman who invented the improv stuff was a social worker who was using it to better assimilate immigrant children on the south side of Chicago in the 20s and 30s. So in many ways, it's not a surprise if you know the backstory. And digging into the sort of celebration idea, I think this is important, which is also like, this doesn't come naturally to people. In fact, for many people, they have a very hard time celebrating their own successes.
Dang, is there something from improv I could be importing here to help people do this? So the celebration, Kelly, you know what it is. Let me explain it briefly. In the Tiny Habits method, after you do a new habit that's super tiny, like floss one of your teeth or do two push-ups or pour a glass of water, and you want to wire that in as a habit. It's not repetition that creates habits. It's emotion, and especially this feeling of shine. So what you do is you hack that by doing something, whether it's a fist pump or raising your arms or a little dance or a clap for yourself, that will bring up this emotion in you, and then that rewires your brain, and it helps create the habit. And some people are really natural at it, and they've done it even without instruction, and some people resist it, and there's a whole spectrum. And you're exactly right that some people are not so good at it.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, they also resist it. They try other parts of Tiny Habits, but they don't do the celebration piece. And I do my best to remind them, it's like, hey, but that's what wires in the habit. Without that, you are not wiring in the habit. And you get the better you are at celebrating. In other words, the better you are at feeling shine on demand, the stronger your ability will be to create habits. Like you can almost have a superpower in creating habits if you can do that effectively.
Do you remember the Al Franken's Stuart Smalley character from Saturday Night Live?
I am kind enough. I am smart enough. Yes.
So I was doing a tour for TNT, the All-Star Game, NBA All-Star Game is here, and they were scouting out places. And one of the women on the crew was like, "Hey, I worked on Harold Ramis on that film." And she's like, "Did you know him?" And I'm like, "Yeah, totally. I knew Harold. I don't know Al well, but I knew Harold well." But apparently Al Franken made them do the daily affirmations every day before the shooting. And the woman goes, "They actually kind of worked." And I'm like, "Oh, I'm reading a book about this. They do work."
Well, then they do. And so, like, you know, the Maui had it thing, it's going to be a great day. Sure, I could put evidence in front of people and say, here's the data, hit it in. But guess what? Just try it.
Yeah.
Just try it and tune in to how you respond. Now, I think you and people listening to this, you know how to tune into that feeling. Okay, so you're going to get it. But there are people out there that are so disconnected with their emotions, they can't feel it. That's a bigger challenge. It's like, wow, you've really distanced yourself from what's going on internally. I don't know how to solve that piece of the puzzle.
No. You have some good stories in the book. And I remember my friend Adam Grant tells the story of one of his students who offered to cut him in early on a deal. And he said no. And, of course, that guy went on to create Warby Parker. You had a student at Stanford by the name of Mike Krieger, right? He did something.
Yeah. So Mike Krieger was a student in my class. And before the iPhone and before apps even existed, I created a project. And I said, hey, one of these days, these things we call phones will be able to take pictures and we'll be able to share them with each other. Mm-hmm. Come up with an idea of a positive use for this future technology. And Mike and two of his teammates came up with a concept they called Share the Sunshine.
Mm-hmm.
Fast forward. Today, it's Instagram. So Mike co-founded Instagram along with another Stanford student. And it's essentially the same idea. Now, Instagram has certainly morphed and become something different than what certainly the class project intended. I mean, there's all sorts of ways to use Instagram. But what he did so well is they kept it really simple.
Yep.
So notice the pattern here. Notice the pattern here. It's the same pattern that I talk about in Tiny Habits. Make the behavior really, really easy to do, and then make it so you feel successful, okay? That's what you do with celebration. You hack it so you feel successful. In Instagram, really easy. You take a picture. At the beginning, it was only on iOS. You couldn't even do it on Android, and it was only square, and there were no videos. So simple, and then you put filters on. And as you put the filters on, and I'm sure other people listening to this remember this at the beginning, each time you put a different filter on, there was this spark of emotion, like, oh, that looks great.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, I'm an artist, or wow, that's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that combo, how simple it was, and then it was sparking that feeling of shine, boom. In the landscape of all the competition for Instagram, and it was really, really competitive, and then you had big players like Flickr
that,
they never could beat as well, never dislodged. They won because of that. It comes down to that simplicity and designing for that positive emotion.
The editing, right? And this is the thing we know from our work, because it's short form content, and we've worked in this. We're Second Seizure in 60 years this month.
Hmm.
And we were always like going tiny. You know, it was like small cast, short scenes, some as short as like, 10 seconds, 11 seconds, and sort of tapping into that. I'm going to ask you for a yes and story in a moment, but there's a couple things from the book I want to touch on. One is you offer the provocative argument for lowering your expectations. So I think you should talk about why is that in this business book?
Well, the mistake is that people think, oh, as I'm running or doing push-ups, every day I have to do better and better and better and better. And guess what? As you raise the bar, there will be a point where you fail. You cannot do it anymore. Just like if, the old thing about, oh, I'm going to lift the baby calf up and then I'll be able to lift the full bull. No, there's a moment when you can no longer lift that animal. In Tiny Habits, the mindset is different. You just make it super tiny, like two push-ups or one tooth or just eat one bite of cauliflower. And that's always the habit. If you want to do more, you can, but that's extra credit.
Mm.
So what that does, mapping back to helping yourself feel successful, you help yourself succeed and feel successful by lowering your expectations, lowering the bar, and not raising it on yourself. Habits will naturally grow. They will grow bigger and you will naturally do more, but you don't require yourself to do more. So it goes totally against the received, well, the received wisdom or tradition of behavior change. But that's what Tiny Habits is about. It's not the same old stuff. It's a breakthrough. And part of that is exactly that. Lower your expectations. But Kelly, one of the things is it's a skill to be able to lower your expectations and keep it there. That's not, it's not common for everybody. So that is indeed one of the skills. And then also another skill is the ability to feel good about just even doing the tiny thing. And in Tiny Habits, I give an exercise for how you develop those skills.
And we should note too, when you have a skill, it requires not just like practice and then it's there. Like Michael Jordan still practiced shooting free throws when he was the best basketball player in the world, and that is writ large for any high performance individual, whether it be, you know, a musician or an artist or a writer or a performer at improv. And you write in the book, quote, you don't learn to dance by reading about it. This is a doing, and it's an ongoing doing.
And the fact that it's so easy to do, I mean, it's not like you have to gear yourself up for January 1st to New Year's resolutions. It's easy. You can just dive in. And in my own life, oh man, I probably wouldn't share this on any other podcast but this one.
Great.
Okay, here we go.
Yeah.
In my own life, as I did Tiny Habits and I, you know, got really good at it, and I was coaching thousands of people, and I pretty much developed all the habits I wanted. And that's like, okay, now what? But I knew it was a skill. I didn't want my skills to get rusty. Mm-hmm. So this is the embarrassing part.
Great.
But then I thought, well, I'm just going to do some weird tiny habits and just to keep the skill alive. And one of them was to put on my underwear inside out.
Hmm.
So why? Well, it didn't make any difference. The way my under, it's not backwards.
No.
Inside out. The way my underwear is designed, it's the same right side out or inside out. It's the same garment.
Sure.
And I thought, well, I'll keep the skill fresh by doing this kind of meaningless thing. But then it keeps me practicing and it keeps me, you know, on the top of my game at creating habits. When I shared that with my editor, he's like, there's no way that's going to
happen. Don't put that in the book. It would have been great in the book. I mean, because this is you know, we talk a lot about the need to make yourself uncomfortable when you are trying to innovate and come from an improviser's mindset. So I was literally working on these prompts today for a project we're working on, and I was borrowing from my friend Neil, who talks about, like, he gives people advice like, you know, when you get into the Uber, actually start a conversation with the driver, like you start it, or when you go to the airport, go into the place and get a magazine that you would never read and read it, you know, like prompts that are going to basically stimulate you in a different way. And the results he gets back from people is they're very much like, oh yeah, no, I got in this conversation. It turns out this person, we knew someone, or I read this article I never would have read. And so I think that your thing is called keeping on your toes, but it's also the way you maybe maintain curiosity in the world, because it is so easy to fall back into those, you know, traps and repetitions and behaviors.
And I think that's exactly right. I mean, the way that you approach optimizing your life should not be like uptight and stressed and it's going to be hard. Just like a plant that's brittle or a tree that's very, very brittle, when the wind comes, it's going to break and fall down. But stay flexible and playful, and improv fits right here so well. There's so many ways but getting people away from the rigid, brittle, uptight into something that's flexible and exploratory, and this is a journey where we're going to discover rather than be perfect, shifting them. I'm hoping Tiny Habits helps to do that. I certainly think what happens in improv can be part of that.
Yeah, I think so too. All right. We always end the podcast with a yes and story. I'm pretty excited about hearing what yours is based on this conversation. So what do you got for us?
Yes, there we go. Yeah, it's not quite underwear, but so I was at a conference that Jerry Mikulski ran. This was probably 15 years ago, maybe 20. And there's 80 people there, and they're kind of these big brain thinker types. And the session's supposed to start, and he rushes in with some flowers in his hand, and he hands them. He's like, "BJ, will you arrange these flowers? Will you arrange the flowers and put them here? I got to start the event." I don't consider myself a flower arranger guy, even though I'm a gay guy and people think gay people have this design sense.
Not everyone.
I'm not sure I got that. I'm not sure that came with the package here.
Gotcha.
So, but I was like, okay, I'll do this. So, you know, so I arrange the flowers and they're up front and they're fine. And I sit down and then Jerry says, "Hello, everybody. Oh, and by the way, BJ Fogg arranged these flowers," and everybody clapped.
Ah.
And I was like, oh, wow. And guess what happened, Kelly?
What?
Because of that, that then opened the door to me learning about Ikebana, the Japanese flower arrangement.
Ah.
I took one of my bathrooms, I converted it to a floral studio, and on and on. In other words, that success, and this is what I've seen in habits too, success leads to success. That feeling of success, that shine that Jerry created for me, then opened the door for me to really go into flowers and learn what a frog is and learn about the flower arrangements and all of that. And that would not have happened if I had said no.
Yeah, it's the yes and to the shine.
We just, yes and.
This is this is our co-written next book.
There we go.
The book is called Tiny Habits, The Small Changes That Change Everything. BJ Fogg, thank you so much for coming on the show.
A delight to talk to you. Thank you so much.
Getting the Yes And is produced by Second City Works and WGN Radio. Our editor and producer is L.F. Garris. We get support at the Second City from Jenny Crowley, Abby Bumbledare, Mike Farinaccio, and Colleen Fahey. The music you hear at the beginning and end of the show is by Jukebox the Ghost. If you have questions, guest ideas, or if you want more information on working with Second City Works, you can go to www.secondcityworks.com, or you can email us directly at works@secondcity.com.
Survive from adulthood. No one survives.